Radio.
Redefining Marriage, The Arguments and Implications. A talk by Monica Duman at Sundays at the Friary in Leichhardt, Sydney.
I want to start tonight on common ground. Instead of talking about where we disagree in this debate, I want to start off where we agree. And that is that we all believe that marriage is something. It has an essence or a nature to it, which is outside of what politicians might decide from time to time. Some things will always be marriage, even if the law says that they aren't. It didn't matter what the law said about interracial marriages. An interracial marriage was a marriage whether the law liked it or not. On the other hand, some things will never be marriage, like a woman and a bridge, even if the law says it can be. So if we agree that some things are marriage and some things aren't marriage, our first and really our only question is, what is marriage? What is marriage? In Australian law at the moment, marriage is defined as the union of a man and a woman to the exclusion of all others, voluntarily entered into for life. This means that marriage has four components. It's heterosexual because it's the union of a man and a woman. It's monogamous because it's to the exclusion of all others. It's voluntarily entered into, and it's permanent because it's for life. So as Catholics, we would agree with all of these, and we would expand on it just a little bit because we also believe that marriage is a vocation. Father Ben said tonight at Mass that we're beginning Vocations Awareness Week. So a vocation is a calling, a particular way to serve God and to imitate his love for others. And vocations are never private. They're deeply personal, of course, but they're not private in the sense that my vocation is just about me. If we understand marriage as a vocation, we begin to understand that it's not all about me. In the same way that Father Ben's vocation isn't about him or Brother John's about his, a vocation isn't simply about doing what fulfills me. And if they lived their lives that way, that would not be a very good thing. Marriage understood as a vocation is the same. Archbishop Fulton Sheen, who was the Archbishop of New York and who some of you might know, would point to the crucifix and describe that as a marriage. So in thinking about the Catholic understanding of marriage, we can't go past the crucifixion. When we talk about married love, that's what we're talking about. Complete self-sacrifice, giving over everything, including your life, for the sake of others so that they might have life. Marriage is fundamentally about giving life, not about self-fulfillment. And that's true of all vocations. In the same way that vocations to the priesthood and religious life point us to a reality beyond ourselves and beyond our present existence on this earth, so too is marriage supposed to point us towards a reality outside of ourselves. And that's why the ability to have children is so central to marriage. We say that marriage is between a man and a woman because it is ordered towards children. Yes, part of the purpose of marriage is the unity of the couple, but that's not the whole purpose. It's also for the procreation of children. Marriage is outward focused. Part of it is, of course, looking outside of myself to my spouse. But if marriage unites us as one, then we can't just be looking at each other because it becomes inward focused. Marriage is having the two of us, or the one of us, as partners, but also the one person, look out of ourselves and towards our children. This is why the Church says no to artificial contraception as well. Because in the same way, it stops us from looking out of ourselves towards new life. And homosexual marriage doesn't give life in that way. To say that, I hope, isn't to be homophobic. It's not about fear or about judgment. It's not about hatred or saying that gay people are incapable of love. Of course they're capable of love. Of course they're made for love. And of course they are able to give it. It's just saying that marriage isn't solely about romantic love. Sorry to burst your bubble for all of the deep romantics in here. So defining marriage as being just about who I love and how I feel takes away from the notion that my marriage isn't mainly about me. Did you know that if a heterosexual couple came to the church and said, we want to get married but we have no intention of having children, that the church would not marry them? We take the link between marriage and children very seriously, even at the moment. This understanding of marriage is written into our bodies. Every system in your body and in mine is complete and able to function alone except one. Your digestive system works just fine. We've just proven that. your respiratory system, your cardiovascular system. The only system that does not work on its own, that needs another, is the reproductive system. It requires unity, and without it, humanity would cease to exist. That marriage is about unity and procreation is not really a religious understanding, it's a biological one. And the link to children also helps us to understand the other components of this definition of marriage. The reason that marriage is traditionally seen as something which is monogamous and permanent is because of its link to children. If children did not come out of that sexual relationship, if sex was just a recreational activity, then there would be no reason for marriages to be restricted to two people or to be permanent. The presence of children and the importance of stability for them is the only reason why monogamy and permanency are part of our definition of marriage and why they're so essential as well. Conversely, if human beings were able to reproduce asexually, if you didn't need a partner in order to have a child, then we wouldn't have marriage. It seems to me that those who want to change the definition of marriage have a different understanding of marriage. And I would have to say, I think it's a smaller one, because the people who are seeking change would argue that the most important factor, the primary factor, is the emotional relationship between the adults, and that marriage is designed mainly for the recognition and honouring of that relationship. So our conversation really isn't about whether or not to allow same-sex couples to marry. It's about taking a relationship that's not a marriage and that can't be a marriage because it lacks one of the essential components, and calling it a marriage in an effort not to hurt people's feelings. And that's not wanting to hurt people's feelings isn't a bad thing. We want our family and friends to be happy, of course we do. We want them to be loved and to feel loved and to feel accepted. But we also have a responsibility to uphold the truth. In those examples that I gave at the beginning, I'm sure that there were lots of people gathered around these women marrying themselves and celebrating that and celebrating them. But in the same way that I think their friends and family were doing them a disservice in that respect, so we too would do our brothers and sisters a disservice if we called that relationship a marriage. Our complete happiness really is found in the truth. Nobody wants to be living a lie. But it's still a hard conversation to have, isn't it? I mean, I'm standing up here saying this and I can feel how difficult it is. And I think one of the main reasons that is because our society today doesn't really have a clear understanding of what marriage is. Particularly over the last 40 or 50 years, we've already done so much damage to the true understanding of marriage. 40 years ago this year, no-fault divorce became legal in this country, meaning that people could get divorced for any reason at all. Back then, it was spoken about in terms of you don't want people subject to psychological or physical abuse, and that would make it easier. And that's a good thing. But now around 1 in 3 marriages end in divorce. And while there still are some very real cases of physical or psychological harm, the majority of divorces today are simply about the feelings of the couple. They're no longer in the same emotional relationship they were when they were married. Even without the same-sex marriage debate, we've already come to a place where our society is accepting that marriage is mainly about the emotional connection of the adults. And another big factor here is artificial contraception. In the last 50 years, use of contraception, particularly the contraceptive pill, has become almost universal, even amongst Catholics. And because of this, because it's possible to have a sexual relationship without the possibility of children, two things have happened. First, as a culture, we no longer consider marriage to be mainly about children. We've already made it about the adults and their satisfaction. And secondly, because sex can occur without children, there's no real reason for sex to be limited to marriage. So the idea of exclusivity in marriage has also been weakened. We can see this idea in the whole concept of cheating websites. I'm not sure if you saw about a week ago, the website ashleymadison.com got hacked, and that's the dating website for married people. While the website's distasteful, the news stories surrounding this were saying that there are 1 million Australian users on that site. There are only about 8 million married people in Australia, and 1 million of them are on a dating website for married people. That's a lot of people in our own country who don't buy into the idea that marriage is exclusive. This is why it's so hard for us to get up here and present the Catholic view of marriage, to explain why it's so important for marriage to remain between a man and a woman. The culture around us has already seen a weakened picture of marriage. We're starting from a handicap, in a sense. again stealing from Archbishop Fisher last week, he talked about this as an unpicking of our understanding of marriage, and I think that that's a really good analogy. Little by little, we've been pulling at the threads of marriage until, at the moment, it's becoming more and more unstable. But despite all of this, we can't give up. And actually, it's a reason to do the opposite. Now more than ever, the people around us really need to know what real marriage is, and that's where we come into it. You would have to be living under a rock to not have seen that the debate about the redefinition of marriage is gaining steam. I also want to speak briefly about why we have laws about marriage in the first place. The government doesn't make laws about any other types of friendships or personal relationships. It governs business relationships. So why marriage? And the answer is relatively straightforward. Governments get involved in marriage because stable families benefit society as a whole. Marriage binds a mother and a father to each other and also to any children that they might have. And children perform better in a stable home environment in any number of factors: education, employment, mental health, their own relationship stability, teen pregnancy, and more. And stable families usually provide care for the elderly and sick members of the family. Without stable families, the government would need to spend more on law enforcement and on health, welfare, and social services. Laws about marriage aren't about providing public recognition or honour to certain types of romantic relationships. No, the reason governments get involved is because it makes economic sense. Again, apologies to the hopeless romantics in the room. Marriage, as we understand it, serves a common good, and that's why the government's involved. But as I'm saying this, you might be sitting there thinking, but can't same-sex marriage also serve the common good and provide stable environments? Or at least you might be thinking, well, it's not going to do any harm. Particularly given the weakening of marriage that I just spoke about, and given our society already accepts a number of non-ideal situations when it comes to marriage, is it really fair that we tell same-sex couple that they can't get married because it will weaken the institution? We often hear that argument, don't we? Those who advocate for the redefinition of marriage point to Hollywood marriages which have lasted about 9 seconds, or they point to situations where somebody's up for their third or their fourth marriage and say that it's pretty hypocritical to suggest that same-sex marriage will be the thing that destroys marriage. And you know what? They have a point. This conversation would be so much easier if we all held to the traditional understanding of marriage as taught by the church. So the first and most important thing that we can do as Catholics to defend marriage is to be more faithful Catholics and to live the teachings of the church better than we are right now. That's our first line of defence. But as I said before, the fact that marriage is already under attack is not a good reason to change the law here. Laws shape culture. Once we change our laws to say that something's allowed, society comes to believe that it's okay, and then that it's completely normal. And we've seen that with divorce. Previously, divorce used to be a big deal. We'd be shocked or at least saddened by it. But now, people throw divorce parties. Some don't even take the as long as we both shall live vows, but something smaller like as long as we both shall love, or as long as our time together lasts. Our laws said easy divorce was legal, and then it started to become acceptable, and now it's quite normal. The same will happen if the law changes to allow couples of the same sex to get married. It will change our culture. We often hear people who want same-sex marriage to be legal saying things like, how will two people of the same sex getting married affect your marriage? We've heard that, haven't we? I think if they thought about it, they might agree that changing the definition of marriage would affect our understanding of marriage generally, but we disagree on whether or not this was a good or bad thing. So, is it a good or bad thing? I'm going to give you 5 reasons now why I think that it's not a good thing. First, and it's one that I've already touched on, it would undermine the idea that marriage is linked to children. Sure, gay couples can and are adopting or using various reproductive technologies to have children, but the marriage itself and that relationship would not be about children. We'd start chipping away, or keep chipping away, after the contraception debate, with the idea that marriage has any link to children at all. Children would become an optional extra, not something which goes to the core of what it actually means to be married, the laying down of your life so that others might have life. The main focus of marriage would switch from the children to the adults. Their feelings and their needs would be the most important consideration. The legalisation of same-sex marriage would also promote the idea that there's really no difference between the genders. We're already starting to get that with the whole transgender phase at the moment. Talk about that genders are a choice and not something innate within us. But the problem with that is it's not true. Mothers and fathers teach their children different things, and the psychological and emotional development of a child is affected when one out of a mother or a father is absent. US President Barack Obama, who you would all know is a vocal same-sex marriage supporter and who lit up the White House in rainbow colours after the recent US Supreme Court decision, had this to say about fatherhood. He said, "We know the statistics that children who grow up without a father are 5 times more likely to live in poverty and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of schools, and 20 times more likely to end up in prison. They are more likely to have behavioural problems or run away from home or become teenage parents themselves, and the foundations of our community are weaker because of it." That's the President of the United States who holds that view and who looks at those statistics and will talk about them, but then equally says that same-gender parents makes no difference. Mothers and fathers matter, and the idea that marriages can exist between people of the same gender would undermine this, again, to the detriment of the children. Another thing that the redefinition of marriage will do is increase the use of assisted reproductive technologies. Obviously, couples of the same gender cannot have children without assistance. For couples comprising 2 women, donor sperm is required. For couples of 2 men, not only is a donor egg required, but also a surrogate mother. Paid surrogacy is illegal in Australia. The only way that you could be an Australian couple and have a surrogate child is either have somebody to volunteer and to do it for free, or more likely, the payment of a surrogate mother from overseas. And commercial surrogacy in other countries has led to a whole raft of problems, and it risks the exploitation of women who are in need of money. At the moment, the countries where commercial surrogacy happens are developing countries with poor women the likely candidates. Women have been trafficked for the purposes of surrogacy, or they're required to live under lock and key in agency accommodation and be monitored for the duration of the pregnancy. Same-sex marriage would place great pressure to make surrogacy legal here, but I don't think that's a good solution either. For starters, it introduces a buy-sell mentality into having children. What would happen if something like the case of baby Gammy happened here? So an unborn child is diagnosed with Down syndrome. Would the parents who are paying for that child be able to force a surrogate mother to get an abortion? Probably not. I don't think we'd go that far in Australia. But then what would happen? Would they be able to sue for breach of contract if the baby wasn't born perfect? And who's the doctor supposed to be looking after? The pregnant surrogate mother or the people who are paying his bills? The clients? Surrogacy is a terrible industry, but it's not going to be made any better by legalising it here. But there will be that pressure if same-sex marriage is legalised in this country. And in addition to the other problems with artificial reproduction, and we can go into those in Q&A if anybody's curious about what the church thinks on about artificial reproduction, but we also hear stories now of how children conceived with donor eggs or donor sperm are on a desperate search to find their biological parents because they feel that part of their identity is missing. Again, it's an example of how focus switches from the children and their needs to the parents to the detriment of the children. Changing the definition of marriage would be our way of saying that the most important aspect of marriage is the romantic love between the couple and the right to have that love publicly acknowledged in some way. But if that's the case, and children having a link to their parents is not essential, there's no valid reason why this should be limited to 2 people. And this isn't an alarmist view, it's just a logical one. It's a very natural consequence of putting equal love as a priority. In New Zealand just recently, 2 male friends got married so that they could go on a holiday. They were heterosexual and were never going to have a sexual relationship, but got married for a trip to the Rugby World Cup. And those who had advocated so hard for same-sex marriage in that country were outraged that this happened. But when they came to explain why they shouldn't be allowed to get married, they didn't really have an answer. Because logically, the emotional argument for same-sex marriage leads us to be able to call other relationships marriage as well. And finally, the impact on religious freedom. And this is not so much that priests or ministers of religion will be forced to perform same-sex weddings. Nobody is suggesting that at the moment, at least. But what about others who don't want to participate in these weddings? In the United States, we've seen photographers and bakers and others who happily serve LGBTI people on a day-to-day basis, but whose conscience tells them that they cannot participate in a wedding, fined for their refusal. We've seen attacks on their businesses so severe that they've had to shut down. We've seen the CEO of Mozilla, the web browser, lose his job for donating $1,000 to a pro-marriage cause 8 years ago. There are so many examples in that country. You might have seen this week or last week a baker in Adelaide who wrote a letter to a local newspaper just expressing her disappointment at the same-sex marriage advocacy that had come out as an editorial in that newspaper. A Facebook group started encouraging people to boycott that bakery. They flooded it with negative reviews. I think now the owners had to disappear overseas out of fear. In Tasmania, Archbishop Julian is threatened with being taken before the Anti-Discrimination Board for distributing the Don't Mess With Marriage booklets, which present Catholic teaching on Catholic marriage in Catholic schools. And even though marriage advocates say that religious freedom will not be affected, we've already had the Director of Australian Marriage Equality, Rodney Croom, tell media that it's only fair that they should also be allowed into Catholic schools to present their side of marriage. Our Human Rights Commissioner, Tim Wilson, has said a wedding service provider like a baker or a photographer or a florist or something like that could opt out of all civil ceremonies to avoid being involved in same-sex marriages. But civil weddings currently comprise 73% of all marriages in Australia. A service provider would have to exclude themselves from three quarters of their target demographic, providing severe financial consequences for those who choose to oppose same-sex marriage. So these things are already happening in Australia, and our laws still say that marriage is between a man and a woman. It's only going to get worse if the laws change. So in the time that we have left, I'd like to quickly take a look at some of the main arguments we hear from those wishing to redefine marriage and just give you a quick response to them. You might hear people tell you that marriage is a human right and we cannot deny this basic human right to people. And that's perfectly true. But the right which exists is not for us to take a relationship with it, which is not marriage, and force the law and others to recognise it as a marriage. The right to marry is the right to enter into the permanent voluntary union between one man and one woman, as described in our law. And this isn't just my view, nor is it just the church's view. A few years ago, a case came before the United Nations Human Rights Committee, and that's what they've said. They said that signatories to the relevant UN treaties did not need to offer same-sex marriage in order to comply with the human right to marry. On the other hand, there is a recognised right for a child, wherever possible, to know and be cared for by its mother and its father, and this would be taken away in families headed by same-sex couples. It's the same as banning interracial marriage. I mentioned this briefly at the beginning. Have any of you here ever been victims of the grammar police? You might have been at school and said something like, "Excuse me, miss, can I go to the toilet?" And the reply comes, "I don't know, can you?" And then you're forced, yeah, it's happened to everybody, yeah. And then so you go, "I'm sorry, may I go to the toilet?" When it came to interracial marriage, it was the government saying, "You may not get married." No one was suggesting that a real marriage could not be formed between the two. Those marriages had all of the necessary elements of marriage, they just weren't given the legal recognition. When it comes to same-sex marriage, what we are saying is you cannot get married. It's not that we're not allowing it to happen, we're not saying you may not, but it's just that we're saying that two people of the same sex cannot form a marriage because they lack one of the essential parts. So the comparison to interracial marriage doesn't work. Same-sex couples should have the same legal rights. There have been many areas in the past where same-sex couples did not have the same rights as married couples. For example, the ability to make medical decisions or to be named as a beneficiary under superannuation plans or things like that were not open to same-sex couples. But in 2008-2009, the Australian Human Rights Commission investigated the differences and something like 80 pieces of legislation were amended to give same-sex couples the same legal rights as married couples. If there are any differences left, by all means, we can change them. But a difference in rights when it comes to taxes is a problem for tax law and not for marriage law. We don't need to change the marriage law to make this a reality. Children of same-sex couples do just the same, if not better, than children of heterosexual couples. We've heard this most recently. I think the ABC did a report just on Wednesday or something like that, saying that children of same-sex couples do a little bit better than children raised in heterosexual families. But then some of you might have also heard studies which will tell you the exact opposite. The Regeneris study, some of you might have seen come out of the US, is an example of that. In reality, we don't know. In order for these studies to have any real significance, they need to have been done over a long period of time, decades or even a lifetime. For studies which show that children of same-sex couples do well, many of them were based on only a small number of participants, and most of those participants volunteered for the study. And if you're self-selecting in that way, it's more likely that you're going to give a positive response. For the studies which show that children of same-sex couples are worse off, many of the participants were not raised by those couples from birth, but they'd been through a divorce of their heterosexual parents first, and their mum or dad went on to enter into a same-sex relationship. Given that divorce itself has negative impacts, that data is unreliable as well. So if both sides of this debate are being honest, all of this is so new that we don't have good enough data to tell us whether or not children of same-sex couples do better or worse. But what we do know is this. One of the biggest studies in the world on the effect of childhood relationships show that the influence of a mother on a child is different to the influence of a father. And this followed men of similar backgrounds. I think they selected them all out of Harvard and followed them for about 70 years. Men who had a warm relationship with their mother proved to be more successful when it came to work, income, and study. On the other hand, the relationship with the father is exclusively influential in the ability to play, to enjoy life and vacations, to have healthy coping skills, and better mental health outcomes generally. The study shows us that mothers and fathers are not interchangeable. It shows us that they impart different gifts to their children. And so while we don't have good long-term data on the effects of same-sex parenting, we do have very good data on what happens when children grow up without a close relationship with mum or dad. We allow infertile or elderly couples to marry is another common objection. I heard that one just today. And the reason that these marriages are still able to be called marriages is that there is nothing different in what they are doing and how they are relating to each other than to a marriage that can bear children. Whether or not children are conceived through marriage is not because they are doing anything differently, which is not the same for same-sex marriage. And additionally, while every married couple might not have children, all children have a mother and a father, and our focus, again, is supposed to be primarily on the children and not on the couple. My marriage won't affect your marriage. We spoke about this again briefly at the beginning, but I just wanted to come back to it. Senator Penny Wong debated Senator Corey Bernardi earlier this week, and she got up and said something like, "If same-sex marriage passes, the sun will still rise the next day and heterosexual marriages will not crumble." And I agree with her. The sun will still rise the next day, and it's not like there's going to be an instantaneous falling apart of heterosexual marriages. But we're not just looking at the tomorrow. We're looking at what happens 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years down the track. And as we've seen with divorce, changing a definition actually has real effects on our understanding of marriage. We need to be concerned not only with tomorrow, but with future generations. Hashtag equal love. You are not allowed to define love. Unfortunately, this is no more than a slogan. Of course, again, I'll say it again, everybody has the right to love and to be loved. It's what we were made for. But what we've done as a society is we've taken this big word love and we've reduced it to romance. And then we've taken romance and we've reduced it to sex. We need to expand and restore the bigger meaning of love. Stealing from Archbishop Fisher, I promise, for my last time tonight. He said we want the cross-shaped loved and not the heart-shaped one. The other point is that we're not talking about the definition of love here. We're talking about the definition of marriage. And the two, while they're connected, they're not exactly the same thing. Denying marriage puts young LGBTI Australians at risk. I want to spend a little bit of time on this one because it's crucially important. Particularly because, as Catholics, we are 100% pro-life and any risk to human life is a grave matter for us. What we're told is our language and what we say in our teaching on marriage affects the mental health of young LGBTI people. A Beyond Blue study that was done last year tells us that there's an increased suicide risk with young LGBTI people. And they tell us that discrimination and exclusion are key causal factors in mental health problems for our young LGBTI teens. So we need to make sure that our language and our approach in this issue always, always comes from a place of love. There should be no safer place for our LGBTI brothers and sisters than in our churches and amongst Catholics who are living out their faith properly. Absolutely, Christians have said and done some terrible things in the past, and some still do it today, and we need to step up and denounce that whenever we see it or we hear it. There should be no safer place for young gay teens than in the Catholic Church. But if I'm being honest, I rarely hear people from the church speaking in terms of discrimination and hatred and exclusion. I mostly hear about the church discriminating against LGBTI people from same-sex marriage advocates and those who have nothing to do with the church. And I think this is a really serious error on their part. It does injustice to the church, yes, but more importantly, these groups increase the exclusion felt by these young people because they use every opportunity they can to tell young LGBTI people that the church hates them and that we're the enemy. So in addition to denouncing bad behaviour on the part of other Catholics, we also need to call this out for the lie that it is when we hear it from marriage advocates. The other thing that the Beyond Blue report tells us is that sometimes a health professional will address the sexual orientation of the young person and not the underlying mental health issues that they might have. In other words, defining people by their sexuality does not help. And that's part of the church's constant message, isn't it? We always say you're not defined by your sexuality and by who you are attracted to. You're so much more than that. Your sexuality is part of who you are, but it's not all of who you are. Marriage is not going to be a cure-all. If mental health problems and difficulties existed before, they will still be there whether or not same-sex marriage is legal. The other thing, we can't be telling young people that marriage will make them happy. What happens if it doesn't? Or when they find, like an increasing number of heterosexual adults, that they can't find anyone to marry. The suicide risks to young LGBTI people will not be solved by a change in legislation, and it's irresponsible to pretend that they will be. I've lost count of the number of times that I've heard people say that the church's position on this is hateful or bigoted or homophobic. But think about a parent who's raising young children for the moment. A good parent sets rules and boundaries, not for the sake of it, but because they want the child to be safe and healthy and happy. Often the child won't understand them, why the rules are made, and they'll accuse their parents of hating them. I mean, I did it, I'm sure you did it too. But what's the parent supposed to do then? Are they supposed to give in and give the child everything that they ask for? And if they did, would that be a loving action? Of course it wouldn't. A parent who couldn't be bothered or who was indifferent might give in to everything that the child wants. But a parent who loves the child will keep those boundaries in place, even and especially when it's hard. And it is hard. It's so hard. It's a matter of the heart. And we all have people in our lives who we love, who experience this attraction, and we want them desperately to be happy. But setting rules is an act of love and not of hate. Hatred would be not caring. It would be throwing our hands up in the air and saying, do what you please. And as much as we might hate it, the church's firm stance of this really is an act of love. It's an act of saying, I care too much about you to let you just go and do what you like. Finally, 72% of Australians support same-sex marriage. That's the statistic we often hear. The statistic comes from research commissioned by Australian Marriage Equality. And while that number is true, there are another few takeouts from that research which they don't necessarily publicise. Although 72% of Australians said that they supported the redefinition of marriage, only 48% of them defined their support as strong, said they strongly supported the change. So the strong support we hear about so often is coming from less than half of the population. They also asked them how important this issue was to them. And even amongst those who say that they support redefinition, 30% of them said it wasn't an important issue at all. The overwhelming push for marriage redefinition is more of a fabrication than you think. And so please remember that and remember these numbers the next time somebody tells you that you're alone in believing that marriage is between a man and a woman or that you have a backward or minority view. And then if we look at the world more broadly, 172 out of the 193 members of the United Nations still define marriage as between a man and a woman. So Australia's laws are in line with the majority of the globe. Things that we can do. First, prayer. It's crucially important. This battle is so much a spiritual one, so much more a spiritual one than a political one. We need to pray for our leaders that they'll make wise decisions based on what's best for all. We need to pray for our families that we will be witnesses of true married love. And we need to pray for our country. 2, be informed. You need good information. Unfortunately, and hopefully I've highlighted a little bit of it in this talk, our media can swing this issue in a very biased way. I'm sorry for the shameless self-promotion that I'm about to do here, but if you sign up for Catholic Talk, I will ensure that you get some of this good, clear information in your weekly Catholic Talk newsletter. I'll have sign-up sheets a little bit later. Next one, inform others. People are going to ask what you think. Once they know you're Catholic, they're going to ask you this question at work or at uni or wherever. You don't have to jump on Facebook and preach, and actually that can often be counterproductive. But if you understand why it's important that marriage remains between a man and a woman, you shouldn't be afraid to speak about it to others. We're not going to get the pro-marriage side of this story out in the mainstream media. This information is going to spread. It'll be in good conversations based on love, and that's where you come in. Contact your local politicians. For those who haven't already, drop your politician a note, an email, give them a call, and tell them that you're in favour of traditional marriage. The other side have concerted campaigns of people doing this, and like you, like us, these politicians can sometimes feel that they're alone in their views. So it's important that you give them the support and tell them that they have people in their electorate who think this way. And finally, outside of prayer, the most important thing we can be doing is defending marriage and family life by the way we live our lives. I don't know if anyone in here is married, but if it is, now is the time for your marriages more than ever to be a witness to others. When I speak about marriage being not so much about yourself, but about the family, we need to live like we believe that's true. For those of us who aren't married, we need to provide great support to our married family and friends. If we believe marriage is all about children, then we need to be doing everything we can to support our friends with young children, babysitting, giving them a word of encouragement, not getting frustrated at the nice large family behind you in mass making a big noise. We need to uphold that we believe that marriage is all about children. This is all very important now, but it will be more important if the law changes. Because it might be the case that the law does change. It might be the case that we're no longer allowed to teach about marriage in our schools. It might happen that any teaching in settings like this, that marriage is between a man and a woman, might be seen as discrimination. And so if it does, the only real way that we're going to be able to help people understand what marriage looks like is to live good and holy marriages ourselves. To sum up, I really want to stress that this is a complex issue, which you would have gotten from the length of my talk this evening. It's so much bigger than a Love Wins hashtag. We need to engage with our hearts, yes, but also with our minds. We need to be looking not only at the right now, but also at the future. Thank you for having me this evening.
That was Monica Duman with Redefining Marriage, the Arguments and Implications. This talk was hosted at Sundays at the Friary at St. Fiacca's Church in Leichhardt, Sydney. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.